Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report. The Red Cedar Report is part of iSportsWeb.com. Be sure to check out that website for the latest sports news and opinions. You can like us on Facebook. And as always, follow us on Twitter at Red Cedar Report. Today on the show, Grant Essenmacher, he's going to be with me. He's with iSportsWeb. He's going to be with me as we recap the Wisconsin game. But Grant, first things first, another tragic loss for a member of the Rose Bowl and Cotton Bowl winning champion Spartan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's tough. And considering the fact with Mike Sabler earlier this year, and now you have Mylon Hicks, it's not a great time for Spartans, especially considering we lost, that we have this news on Sunday. And even D'Antonio said during his teleconference that, you know, this loss really shocked their program. It was not, I mean, it's just another one of those freak things. It's the same thing with Sabler where you're just not expecting it. He wasn't, I mean, nobody expected to hear that kind of news on Sunday. And Sunday, it's in and of itself with Jose Fernandez and Arnold Palmer. I mean, Sunday was a horrible day for the Lost Lives. That was crazy. But it's really terrible. I mean, especially, you know, like I said, with Sabler and all the things that have happened, that's to lose another guy that's close to Spartan Nation, close to everybody in Spartan Nation. I mean, it's awful.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to go on social media, and you can see the type of impact that he had. Jermichael Dean, who, you know, was a Spartan a long time in the CFL, playing for the Calgary Stampeders, the same team that Mylon Hicks was contracted by. Never met the guy in the like about what he meant as an individual and everything along those lines. And, I mean, it's just sad. I mean, nothing ever good happens after 2 a.m. And so, given the timing of the situation, we don't exactly know what took place when he got a shot in the nightclub. And we don't want to jump to any conclusions, but it is a tragic loss, 23 years old. And, I mean, normally, what it is people will look at death of, you know, when reunion teams get together 10 years ago or something like that, or anything along those lines, and you look at the team and you see how many's left. You do a 5-year reunion, two members are gone already. And two years down the road, Mylon Hicks, Mike Sadler are already. It's just really unfortunate for the program and really unfortunate scenarios, just freak of nature type things for both of them. And it's rough to take.
Right.
We would love to talk on this a little bit more, but, you know, not a lot of time. We do have a lot of actual football stuff to get to. So, once again, our thoughts and prayers with the Hicks family and everything they're going through, and Spartan Nation, all the teammates and everything else for Milo. Let's get to the game. Let's start first with the absence of Riley Bola. Not a lot of people saw it coming. Steve Reschke reportedly said something prior to the game starting about John starting at middle linebacker. I think that kind of opened up everybody's eyes as to, hey, something's going on with Riley Bola. Riley Bola did not play. Mark D'Antonio keeping things close to the chest as normal. Chances are he's holding back, like waiting for a final word, but let's get your initial impressions on that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you got to point out two or three guys that Michigan State can't afford to lose if they want to keep winning football games and have a chance to win the Big Ten and achieve their goals. I mean, Riley Bola, top of the list, outside of maybe Malik McDowell or even including McDowell. I mean, that's a guy that you really just can't afford to lose. And I mean, the good thing for State is they do have a lot of depth at linebacker, but a lot of it is really an outside linebacker, not as much on the inside. They have the Sam and the Mike. They have Dowell and Rashke and Ed Davis and all these guys that are used to playing on the edge. You know, I thought Shane Jones did an okay job for having to fill in on short notice, not knowing he was going to play probably at all. and having to come in and you know, finding out before the game that Bowler wasn't going to play. But, I mean, obviously, going forward, Michigan State has to get him healthy if they want to achieve any sort of success this year. I mean, he's the leader of their defense. He makes the calls. He's crucial to what they do defensively, and they're definitely going to have to figure out what they want to do moving forward. Maybe moving Reschke to the middle is the solution, and playing Dowler or Davis more on the outside. But, I mean, like I said, that's just a guy that you really can't afford to have go down.
Yeah, and if you look at that situation, I mean, look, Shane Jones, you said he played all right. He played pretty good. Excuse me. He played pretty good, but and he made the calls. He just made them a little bit slower.
Right.
And so when something changes on the Wisconsin side, you've already got to change the defense once. You got to change it a second time, and that was something Riley Bulla excelled at. You mentioned John Reschke. He came in as the middle linebacker, so I think it's not out of the question that he can play there. Plus, it would add a ton of speed to the outside when you have Dowell and Fry as your two outside linebackers. Plus, the Spartans are, as you mentioned, kind of – they're slowly weaning Ed Davis back into it, but I think they're just going to use him on pass rushing situations because he missed so much of the summer and missed so much – obviously all of last season, and you can see how much just missing a summer workout can hurt when you look at the Delton Williams situation from last season. He was a great running back and then turned around and averaged 2 yards a carry after averaging 6 for a career. So I think they're only going to use him more or less as a specialist, but Shane Jones did play solid. Byron Bulla is still an option. He actually was the number two mic until Riley went down. He was seeing quite a few reps. And so it's going to be interesting to see how the Spartans handle that situation moving forward. Should this be a long-term thing? Which obviously the Spartans just cannot afford to have at this moment. Let's talk about the rest of the game. What were some of the things that you saw that stood out to you?
First and foremost, when you do turn it over 3 times, I believe Wisconsin had 21 points off those turnovers. You're not really going to win.
20.
They missed the extra point. Okay, that's right. So 20. Either way, it was 3 touchdowns. I know, you know,
yeah.
The O'Connor thing we'll get into later, but when you have those kind of turnovers, especially where you have them, and then you have the punt where Hartberger dropped the punt and he fell on it at the 5-yard line. But still, I mean, you get the ball back at the 5. You know, those things, you're just not going to win football games that way. But, I mean, you know, Wisconsin, they did do a good job of dictating up front. That was the one thing that stood out to me, too, is everybody could talk about O'Connor didn't do this or the secondary didn't cover enough or whatever it may be. But it seemed like both sides of the ball, Wisconsin's offensive and defensive lines were pushing Michigan State back. And that, I mean, everything starts up front in football. I mean, that's, you know, an old adage, but it rings true. And you look at the best teams in the NFL, the best teams in college football are the ones that have consistent line play. And so far this year, I thought Michigan State's line has been okay. They've been good enough, but this might've been the first time where they faced a line that was just as good, if not better. And you saw what happened. So obviously you can't have that either. But a couple stats, too. I mean, third down efficiency, Wisconsin was a lot better on third down, 7-16. And they also converted both their fourth down opportunities, too. So getting off the field on defense is huge as well. I mean, there's multiple times, especially in the first half, where we had them at 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10, and we just couldn't get off the field. They would get a completion down the field or whatever it may be. So, I mean, you know, defensively, I know it's tough when you get put in field position situations after turnovers and things like that, which is going to make your stats look a little bit worse, but at the same time, you do have to get off the field. You know, you can't let them just march down. We did a pretty good job stopping the run. I mean, I think Corey Clement only had something like 75, 76 yards on the ground, but like I said, they let the redshirt freshman have time in the pocket, and, you know, eventually the receiver's going to get open. You can only cover for so long, and that kind of attributes to getting off
Clement
the field
Clement only
well,
had
so. 54, that's what it was. Yeah, okay. So I was like, you know, If you would have told somebody before the game that Michigan State held him to 54 yards, you probably would have liked their chances to win the football game. And then you look at the score, and it's 30-6. So that should attest to the turnover problem and getting off the field, things like that. So those are the things that really stood out to me in terms of the issues that you saw from the Spartans.
And I mean, there were a couple of those third and longer situations that you mentioned for Wisconsin, but I think that there's a little bit of a tie-in with the way they dominated up front and the fact that they converted on third downs, because they were able to get the third and manageable situations. Now, these are the same third and manageable situations that the Spartans kept getting against Notre Dame. The difference was Notre Dame's defensive line is almost as trash as their secondary is. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I live down here in South Bend. One of my jobs is covering Notre Dame football a little bit, and I've seen enough of that defensive line to know there's not a lot there. They've only got one sack on the season. And so the offensive line looked good, and that was one of our concerns that we talked about on the show, is whether or not the offensive line, how they played against Notre Dame, was, are they starting to finally gel? Because they're all experienced, they're all talented players, but I would argue having an offensive line gel is more important than having a quarterback and a receiver gel. And so I was curious to see if that was the case. And right now, it was just a product of playing a very lousy defensive front in Notre Dame. Even Furman kept things kind of even with Michigan State up front. And they feel like they won that game in the trenches. Furman did. And so that's the biggest issue. And it goes on both sides of the ball, because Michigan State's defensive line, they've not gotten much of a pass rush this season outside of McDowell.
Yeah, and I think one of the, as you pointed to earlier, one of the things that could help with that is the more Ed Davis does see playing time. I mean, he's when he's completely healthy and when he's his normal self, he'll help with the pass rush off the edge. But I agree. I mean, Wisconsin, like I said, when you know coming into the game, everybody's like, okay, well, they're going to give Hornibeck his first start or the redshirt freshman, and you figured, okay, you know, that's a tough place to go and get your first start at Michigan State. I mean, that's not an easy place to make. I know he played a little bit the week before, but his first start at Michigan State at number 8 in the country, I mean, that's tough. But when your offensive line gives you all day to throw, if you have the talent, the arm talent, you're going to make those throws. So, you know, that's a huge issue. And I think, you know, one of the more concerning things is Wisconsin plays a very similar style to Michigan State, and they came to East Lansing and beat them in their own game. I think that's something that has to concern Spartan fans a little bit. Outside of the quarterback play, outside of certain guys that may have not played well, there's just the fact that they lined up to play smash mouth football, we lined up to play smash mouth football, and they beat us at it. And that's, you know, that's something that you can't have happen if that's the style you're going to play.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I think the game is so shocking, is because Michigan State wins those games. They've not had problems with those games. They are the best power football team back in front in the nation outside of Alabama.
Right, outside
of
Alabama.
In which case, some would argue a guy like Kenyon Drake changes Alabama's scheme a little bit from being strictly a power team, because Michigan State shut down Derrick Henry.
Right.
And so,
yeah, Derrick Henry didn't have a lot of success at all. So.
And so my next question is what has happened with Demetrius Cooper? Because he was second on the team in sacks last year, only behind Calhoun. He only played in pass rushing situations. He didn't play all the time. What have you seen from Demetrius Cooper specifically where he's not reaching the level that a lot of people thought he would this season?
Well, I mean, I think a couple things. One, he was going into the year, he was, you know, the second primary pass rusher outside of McDowell. And so when that happens, with McDowell lining up majority of the time on the inside, he does line up outside sometimes. But when McDowell's on the inside, you know, they can double-team McDowell with the center and the guard, whatever it may be, however they want to block it. But Demetrius Cooper's getting chipped by running backs more. He's having more attention paid to him. And I'm also part of it too, is last year you could never be complacent with the defensive line depth that they had last year, a lot more than they have this year. They have some true freshmen behind Cooper that can play, but once you're a starter, and sometimes it just depends on from kid to kid, but once you do become a starter, you can get complacent. And I think part of that is what's going on. I don't expect his downward trend to continue. He's a good football player. He proved that last year. But like I said, I think, you know, the getting chipped by running backs more is probably part of it. But, you know, when McDowell lines up on the outside, it's kind of the same situation he had last year where he's the second guy, same thing where he had with Calhoun. So when McDowell does line up on the outside, you would think that Cooper would have all the opportunity to get to the quarterback without looking at chips or double teams or whatever it may be, and he just hasn't really seemed to do that. So he's definitely a guy that needs to step up on that line, and that's really a glaring issue on the defense right now is the pass rush. So he could be a guy that for sure needs to up his play for them to, you know, start getting more consistent pressure on quarterbacks.
Yeah, their only real pressure that we've seen this year is when they do send the linebackers. And, I mean, they got a little on Hornibrook. A little.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just incredibly poised for a redshirt freshman. He took a lot of shots early, a big one from McDowell, a high-low in one of the top, one of the first three possessions of the game. And he took some shots. And he was able to bounce back. Michigan State couldn't keep the pass rush going. Wisconsin, I don't know if they figured him out schematically. Or, like you said, Michigan State just doesn't have the depth to hang in there with the Badgers right now on the defensive front. And so, I mean, there's a lot of things that could have played into that. Before we talk about the biggest topic of the day, obviously that is going to be the situation about with Tyler O'Connor. You wrote an article earlier. It's in the it's on freepress.com, Detroit Free Press, about Michigan State still controlling their outlook. Just kind of give us a preview of that and tell us why Spartan fans should maybe pull themselves back off the ledge a little bit.
Yeah, so I was, you know, it's really just every Michigan State fan needs to kind of take a collective deep breath. And what I mean by that is just you have to have faith in the system that's in place, faith in the coaching staff. You know, this team doesn't lack talent. Last year going into the year, you knew they had senior leaders at key positions, and there wasn't a lot of question marks at quarterback or at linebacker or whatever it may be, or defensive line, not really questions of linebacker this year either. But, you know, with a new quarterback coming in, it takes some time. O'Connor's starting to get, you know, starts after starts after starts. He only started one game prior to this year. But I think with what everybody, you know, the comments that I saw after the game from fans, the reaction I saw from fans is, you know, going into the year, there was a group of fans that expected Michigan State to maybe take a step back, 8-4-ish range. And there was a group of fans that were a little bit more optimistic and saw them maybe not going to the playoff again, but perhaps going 10-2, a New Year's Six Bowl and the possibility at the end of the year. So, and now I think that everybody, or at least the majority of the fans, are ready to give up on this team. And I just don't – what they have to understand is it's kind of the same situation as Nebraska was last year. A loss to a Big Ten West team isn't the end of the world. You go and you win your division and you win the Big Ten title, you're probably in the playoff, especially losing this early to a quality opponent. Now, I know it was a blowout, but if an 11-1 Michigan State wins the Big Ten, you know, they'll be right there in terms of playoff consideration. And so I know that seems far-fetched right now given the performance we just saw on Saturday, but I think more of the performance we saw on Saturday too is a tribute to, you know, it was a noon game against a really good team coming off an emotional high. You go to one of your rivals, you win pretty convincingly. And, you know, you come back home and, you know, there's a lot more talk about what happened the previous week as opposed to what's going to happen next week. And I think, you know, I kind of smelt it earlier in the week. I didn't think that they would let it happen, but with some of the youth on the team, they did. And they have these slip-up games every year. Nebraska was a slip-up game last year, too. They just can't afford any more errors. That's what it is now. But like I said, they still control their own destiny to win the Big Ten, to go to the playoff. And even if that seems far-fetched now, it's still possible. So
Yeah, and it's kind of what Tyler O'Connor said. Like, it was a West team. He goes,
right.
I've been here for 4 years, and we've never been undefeated. Well, he's got 2 Big Ten championships, a Rose Bowl, a Cotton Bowl, and a college football playoff to show for it.
Right.
Like, this one loss isn't the end of the world. And, I mean, you talked about the difference a little bit. You look at those turnovers. One was taken to the house. The defense couldn't get on the field. You know, I'm sure that they're happy they got at least a little bit of a break.
Right,
another one,
right.
Tyler O'Connor threw an interception on Michigan State's own 25-yard line. So they only got 25 yards to go for the score. And then the Harbarger fumble, the botched snap where he fell on it, Blake O'Neal, pay attention, where he fell on it on the 5-yard line. I mean, ultimately, it wasn't an end-of-the-game situation like the Michigan game last year. So Wisconsin only had 5 yards to go there for a touchdown, and we talked about their dominance up front. You look at those three turnovers, only one by O'Connor in that stretch anyway, that led to those 20 Wisconsin points. And you're looking at, well, what I predicted, team game in favor of Michigan State. You're looking maybe not at a Michigan State victory with that score, but you're looking at a game around that score, and you're looking at a game where it could still go either way, even with O'Connor's other 2 interceptions that he's thrown.
Right, and I think, you know, the game is completely different without the fumble return for a touchdown. I mean, you could see it swing so heavily in Wisconsin's favor after that happened. And it was so disheartening because it was 13-6 at the time. They were driving, you know, and they had everything in front of them. It might have been 13-3 at the time. I can't remember. But they had everything in front of them to start making the comeback and making it a game in the second half, like you said. And so that turnover really, and then follow that with the punt, and you're right. It's just when it rains, it pours sort of deal. And I think the score is much more lopsided than the teams actually are. You know, they've played each other 10 times. They're probably going to split 5-5 depending on the side of the game. So it's not like Michigan State, I don't think, was that much worse than Wisconsin. I just think on that day they were.
Yeah, and let's be real. These two teams can play each other again. But I'm looking at this like, am I changing my prediction for the game? I might not. Michigan, outside of those turnovers. And here's the thing is, when you look at a team and you're like, oh, well, the turnovers didn't happen, so-and-so would have won. It's like, that works in some cases. It doesn't work in others. For instance, let's use Denard Robinson. Denard Robinson was a turnover waiting to happen in Michigan State game. Oh, well, if you take away that pick six from Isaiah Lewis, Michigan's got shot to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Denard always turned the ball over. Michigan State, they don't turn the ball over that much. And so I think you can make the case like, hey, you nick some of these stupid turnovers, Michigan State's got a shot. Now, if the turnovers persist, then obviously the statement that I just made about them maybe swinging the game, completely null and void, because that's Michigan State's team now. And if the turnovers persist, there's a quarterback controversy. And, I mean, I think we all know what that means. A lot of people are already clamoring for Brian Lewerke to come in over Tyler O'Connor. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think you could probably tell based on the tone of the article I wrote and the tone that I've used so far here is when you have a loss like this, I think people tend to go into panic mode. And at least from my position, I'm happy that it doesn't seem like D'Antonio is doing that. He's going to, you know, based on the reports, stick with O'Connor. I think that's the right decision. You know, if things persist and Michigan State starts losing games to teams they shouldn't lose to, I mean, their next 4 games are all games they should win. With O'Connor a quarterback, they really should head into the Michigan game with 1 loss on their record. So, you know, I think if things start to persist, and let's say they lost to Indiana next week or they struggle with BYU or whatever it may be, then maybe you look at a switch. But this season isn't lost because of this one loss. And I don't think that by putting Lewerke in, you're essentially – I think when you make a decision like that as a coach, it can go one of two ways. The first one is you have an injection of youth and the team rallies behind the young quarterback and maybe he plays well, wins some games, gets the fan base excited. Or it sends a message to your team like, hey, I don't have faith in the senior anymore. Like everybody else, better watch out. Kind of like with what Brian Kelly did in his statement after the Notre Dame game where, you know, the all 22 guys, they're starting positions up for grabs or whatever it may be. And you don't want to send that message to your team when you're 2-1 and you still have a shot to do some special things. And so it, outside of that, I do think O'Connor is still the right guy for the job. He played poorly, but he played very well against Notre Dame, played very well against Ohio State last year. I think he is a guy that seems to rise in big occasions. I just think the team as a whole wasn't prepared to play this game. They didn't really seem like they were energetic or into it at all. And so I don't think this game should be, you know, the downfall of Tyler O'Connor. I think he'll bounce back. He'll be better. I think he's the guy going forward. Unless things persisted like this game where he has the turnover problems again, I don't see a reason to make the switch yet, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, the way I see it, which, by the way, who would have thought after three career starts, a win in South Bend, and with one of them being a win in South Bend, one being a win in Columbus, that you'd be clamoring for that quarterback's head? I mean, it's a little, it's a little odd. Even though there are extenuating circumstances, the rain in Columbus kind of skewed the game a little bit, and then made a really run heavy game. And the Notre Dame sucks, so they're not as good as everyone thought that they were going to be. But I mean, I'm right there with you. Like, the next three games are a tryout, pretty much, for O'Connor. If there's a slip-up, if he screws up against Indiana, even though Indiana's defense has improved with their new 4-2-5 under their new defensive coordinator, if he has issues against BYU, if the BYU game results in a loss, I think maybe the leash is tightened a little bit. I still don't think that it would be a situation where O'Connor would lose his job. But if he were to lose maybe Indiana or Northwestern, I think that there's an issue and something needs to be looked at. Now, if you do put in Lewerke, you've opened up the door, and it's a youth movement. Not just at quarterback. You're putting in Josh King. You're playing Austin Robertson. You're playing Tristan Jackson. You're playing Cole Chewins. You know, you're playing these younger guys who don't often get an opportunity to play. Who otherwise? And so I think that these next few games are a tryout. Now, the reason I say the next three as opposed to the next four is because number four is, who is it, Maryland.
Yep.
Maryland is coached by DJ Durkin, who is the defensive coordinator at Michigan. You give Lewerke a tryout in that game if O'Connor does not pan out over the next three. And if Lewerke succeeds, he'll be ready for Michigan. He'll already have a start under his belt. He'll be a little more relaxed for the rivalry game. And so I think that the next three games are going to be telling if O'Connor is going to hold on to the job.
Yeah, and I think really if you look at next week at Indiana, if there was a game this year that is more interesting outside of the big ones with Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame, I'm not sure there is, given the situation now. I mean, you're going to go into Indiana. Indiana plays everybody tough because they can score points. Their defense has improved, like you said. And if you're Tyler O'Connor and you're the Michigan State offense, you have to go into that game with the expectation like you're going to have to score. And you're going to have to score a lot because Indiana's offense is going to score, especially given the way our defense has played. So I think it'll be really telling to see how he and the rest of that offense plays, because if they do play well, it'll show at least that they can – play well and beat up on their opponents that they probably should beat up on. Indiana's not a slouch anymore. You know, they're a good team. They're not horrible like they used to be.
But that does it for us today. Hey, be sure to check us out later this week as we preview Michigan State's big game against Indiana for Grant Essenmacher. I'm Tyler Hayward. This was the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report.